Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to the Allison Park Leadership Podcast, where we discuss the principles behind the plans. As always, I'm one of your hosts. My name is Dave, and this is...
And my name is Jeff, and we're really glad you're joining us today. So again, we're father and son, and we have our other son, my other son here, Josh, with us, who's the assistant pastor at the Hampton Campus, Dave, at the Northside Campus. I'm the lead pastor at Allison Park Church, and we're glad you joined us.
Why don't you let Josh say hi?
Hi, I'm Josh.
You're just like, this is the other song.
Yeah, this is...
We have a few other brothers,
yeah, actually, there are four sons and a daughter, Alyssa. And honestly, this podcast, we were talking about it the other day, we're amazed at how far it's come. And honestly, it sort of started... We started very ghetto on Zoom in the middle of the pandemic, talking about some things that we actually wrestled through during our family dinners on Tuesday nights. Yeah. And so often... We get, although there's too many kids to have these serious conversations now.
Maybe the crossover event of the century with the podcast is coming, where all of the kids come on.
Oh man, we get nothing done. Seven grandchildren, all under the age of six.
Yeah, that would just be like
chaos.
Yeah, on a podcast. I'm thankful, you know, for the... I was talking about this. We are coming up. I think we've done 3 years of this now.
Yeah, we're in year four.
Exactly
right. We started in March, so we are having our anniversary. How about that?
Yeah,
woo, party. 3 years. Do we have any 5-star reviews to give shout outs?
Okay, thank you for steering us. What a segue. All right, we just want to give a quick shout out and thank you to Kara McAuliffe and to somebody named Please Fix NASB Strongs. I'm not sure what's wrong with NASB Strongs, but that's a fair title. So we want to say thank you to them. Thank you to our regular listeners. And we would love to give you a shout out as well. And, you know, leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify too really does help us spread the word. So we just want to say we thank you for that. We thank you for joining us. Thank you for those of you who have been sticking with us for a few years. My wife is going back to some of our older episodes, and she was like, oh, I wanted to hear some of these. And I was sort of like, because we did start in sort of a ghetto, janky place. And, you know, I'm actually, the content I still appreciate, but I'm a little embarrassed of.
Well, we got better at everything. We found our rhythm. We found our niche. And I think we're in a good spot. And typically we like to talk about stuff that has a little edge to it, things that people are curious about. And
because you're such an edgy guy, right?
So because I'm edgy. Yeah, no, because, you know, we don't have time in a weekend service often to fully have a treatment on a subject that maybe needs to be discussed, and it's cultural issues that are happening. And so we have a chance to do that here.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, like this particular episode, things come out of stuff that you guys are annoyed about.
I don't know if this episode fully came out of irritation, but they're definitely
annoyed questions.
At least in the past hour have been some conversations.
Yeah, I don't think this one particularly is. So this episode, just to kind of give a overview, we want to have a conversation about spiritual authenticity. What is real church versus fake church, or real Christians versus fake Christians look like? You know, where does authenticity come in, especially when we're talking about seeing a move of God? Are we being prevented from seeing revival because we're too produced or inauthentic, or, you know, not reverent enough, or not, you know, whatever, not passionate enough? And so, yeah, I think authenticity is sort of a buzzword of the day. It's not just it's not a church word. It's really a culture word that is in the church and maybe has some applications, or we could look at some things in the Bible about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think this really was reflective of some of the comments regarding the Asbury revival that happened in Asbury of Kentucky, where for several weeks, seemed like all day long, all night long, they were just going after God. And maybe, Josh, you could describe why people described that experience as authentic. What were some of the things about that?
Yeah, well, I've been trying to be better about not being online as much. So I haven't seen a lot of the conversation online about it, but in some of my conversations what I've seen online and with people that I know, it was generally circulating about the fact that, you know, this was so special because look at the room it happened in. It was no lights, nothing. It was just an average chapel service, average speaker, average day. And then it led into weeks of non-produced, non-scripted worship, all spontaneous for, you know, days and weeks on end. And that was seen as a, you know, I mean, obviously was a mark of something special that has been what's going on. But I think what's been so interesting to me as is been what people take, what are people's takeaways as what should be modeled or what that means for the rest of the church world. If that's happening there, what then should we now do? Because what I have seen is some pressure applied, not as much, maybe from what I have seen, like, you know, on comments online, probably less in person, just about that, since that's happening here, why is that not sparking things? Mm-hmm.
So let me just jump in a little bit. So Josh, you lead worship, mm-hmm. and over the last, what, 15 years, worship has become a little more produced. Is that correct? Am I saying that right? So because you have click tracks and loops, if people don't know what that is, which is like some computer generated stuff. And often churches have lighting that's coordinated and haze that's blown into the air. And my generation sort of resisted that, and older than me, for other reasons, because they grew up with a little more traditional feel, windows open, a lot of light in the room. Now it went dark. The room went dark. The haze came out. Lights, click tracks, loops.
More concerty.
Yeah. And then Asbury was unplugged acoustic sort of a feel. So am I describing that right?
Yeah, I think, okay, well, let's just talk specifically about the past 10 years, even in the past 10 years for, and you know, there's so much worship music and so much happening that you could go in any direction. But in general, it has gotten, with technology, so much easier to standardize based on click tracks and loops and the availability of all of that. If churches want to do that, which again, a lot of bigger churches, or not even necessarily that, just churches.
Well, actually smaller direction. Churches, like some of our smaller campuses, have used click tracks and loops to fill out the sound in the room so that if you just have an acoustic guitar, it makes it feel bigger.
Can I bring it back to a topic though? I feel like we're sort of,
we got,
like,
down the road a little on music.
Because the whole idea is that there's this feel that less produced music, less concerty music is a little, well, I'm not trying to meme this, I'm just saying it's a little more holy because it's more genuine, it's more authentic. And when we get away from the stage and away from wearing, you know, the specific, you know, Jordan ones and the black jeans with rips and the chains, and when it's not the Instagram followers and it's behind, you know, sort of this veil of, this is not as excellent and it's more raw and people are really worshiping, then we're connecting with God in a different way. And I think that's a lot of what sparked the authenticity conversation. It's been around for a long time.
Yeah.
It's
funny to me because I'm old enough that I have heard this conversation on the other side.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, on the other side of when it started to be produced, there was the same conversation. But first I want to say, I think the Asbury Revival was an amazing thing.
Yeah.
I hope it happens all over the world.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm in no way against it. I think what we're talking about is the commentary regarding it and the whole question about, is this more authentic?
And what I'll just specifically say is, I think the reason it was good to just talk about where things are at is, and you can, I would love your thoughts. I think it maybe primarily circulates, at least starting with worship and with music. I know that it's with other things. It certainly goes into how you present yourself online and how you
communicate.
How you preach. Yep. But I do think since it's like so, you know, most services start with worship, and since the direction of music has been so, we're going to build quality and standardize it, I do think at least some of the commentary has been very focused on that.
Yeah. Sure. So let's actually swing the conversation though a little bit, because at the Hampton campus, again, Josh is a gifted musician and not every week leads worship, but often does.
Sure.
And one of the particular messages where you preached, you ended the service by just having you and the keys. Okay. So you, it was no band, there was no click track. It was just you and the keys. You got up there, you sang, you led people. What was the response to that? You personally, well, and then from other people.
Yeah. Well, so I'll say you pitched me the idea because, you know, Grandpa Spencer, which is, he was, when he would preach, he would do that at the end. He would sometimes get on and play and lead. When you pitched me the idea, my first reaction was people are going to think that I'm being so you know, ego hungry, inauthentic, disingenuous.
Because you put yourself at the center.
Because I preach and then I'm like, I don't want anyone else to do this. My insecurity was, I don't know if I want to do this because I'm going to get here and people are going to think this. He's just making this the Josh show. And I'm sure some people probably did think that. But in general, the response, I mean, once I was just like, okay, do I feel like this is the right thing? Yes or no? Yes. The response was really great. And it was about a lot of those conversations, a commentary of, man, it's just so great to be able to hear each other singing. And, you know, we remove anything that feels performancey. We don't need anything else. All we need is just hunger for God.
But it also was really great. Like, God moved and
yeah.
It allowed for you, what I had said, to minister your message in music. Mm-hmm. Which is a little bit different than just...
We even had that too. Whenever we had our youth weekend where the stage was down and it was, I think it was just you on keys and something else maybe?
While the youth retreat was happening, I was leading worship for our adult service with just me on keys.
Yeah, I tuned into that because I obviously am at the Northside campus, so I don't usually see where Darcy leads worship. But I was like, oh, this is so cool. And I do think that there is at the very least... Whether it's good or bad, it's in vogue to be a little less produced, or at least that is one of those. And I hate to say trendy, but it is. There might be good elements to it. Again, this is not saying good or bad, but it's one of those tastes that's a preference that's coming alive more.
Yeah,
people respond to that; they like that. There's a hunger for that, for less produced, for a little more raw and authentic.
Okay, so let's ask the question though. Is that just a stylistic thing? Does that have anything to do with... Because I think of authenticity, I think of it as a motive thing, not as a style thing, right? So if Grandpa Spencer was alive, okay, he has since passed. He was a great keyboard player, and he got down and he played the piano on the keys. He would sing what would be his authentic self, songs that you would never know, because he sang it in his generation. And he could be very real and raw. He could also be very produced. To me, that's just an approach. It's a style. It's authentic is when you're being genuine. You're being sincere. Can you be produced and sincere? And can you be unproduced and insincere? Isn't it possible to be inauthentic and be unproduced?
Yeah.
Because I don't think the two of them have anything to do with each other. I think we say it feels more authentic. But I think what we're doing is we're actually producing an environment to create a trendy atmosphere that everybody wants, and then we call it authentic. But I think that's just stylistic.
I think there's more to it. I think there's more to it than just that.
Okay.
But I will say what I do think is true. I know I'm picturing face people that I know disagree with me as I'm saying this, but I do think this is true. I think that there is still I know we're containing this to music. It's bigger than music. There's actually an article from Relevant Magazine I would pull up in a second, but we'll stick with music for a second. I do think that if a part of less produced is that it becomes not as high quality, like when Josh is leading on the keys, he's really good. And so it's still like, oh, this is awesome. It's just, it's a different style and it's raw and it's authentic. But if we put somebody up there who can't sing that well and they're on acoustic guitar and they're learning, all of a sudden it's like, man, that worship was kind of rough.
But it's still authentic.
It's authentic and it's raw. It's more raw. It's not produced. But I think that there's still
value. But we say, so is X, by its very nature, does excellence mean inauthentic? Can't you be excellent and authentic at the same time?
Well, okay.
So you could also be poor and authentic at the same time. And I think what our generations are demanding now is authentically excellent.
That's what I'm saying. I think that there's a little bit of disingenuousness if it still needs to be really good for us to experience that.
Okay. Here's what I'll say on the other side though.
Uh-huh.
I think some of what people sometimes sense, including me, is that when a church isn't willing to do something like that, that it feels like on Instagram when it is incredibly curated. We cannot allow the lights to ever not do this or the music to ever be less than this. Because if we just have, and I understand where these conversations come from, but like, what if we were to just do piano and somebody singing, is somebody going to walk in and they'll be like, this is so weird. I don't like this. And so I think sometimes what people sense is like a church can be image obsessed. And so they don't.
Lights and smoke and big sound is a show and you're just performing. And the preacher is personality driven. He's just performing. Mm-hmm. And the organization is corporate and they're just, you know, they're just all about themselves, right? Isn't that sort of the idea? Mega church, yeah. Personality driven pastor, showy worship style, everything glitzy on social media. It feels like there's a veneer that covers it all.
Yeah, I think that's
and right. I feel like I can't really know the true you because everything that you have almost it feels so plasticky.
So yeah. So right? I have a good question for you then as the leader of the church, and I think I've heard people at our church ask this and just online, is I think people do associate a move of God and the Holy Spirit with some degree of you allow him to mess up a plan. Like there's some degree of spontaneity. So something that always comes up is, you know, even though when I led worship from the keys, it was still 18 minutes. It wasn't like I flowed for longer. People got this sense that it wasn't as, which I mean, is somewhat true. But I mean, I think a question would be as a part of what we do, if the Holy Spirit was really moving in the way that he did in Asbury Revival, or if we were to give him room, wouldn't sometimes worship go for 45 minutes? Or wouldn't you sometimes decide to preach for longer because like authenticity is always tied to some level of spontaneity?
Okay.
That's a good point.
Well, having lived through our own little mini revival, which was on no level the same as Asbury, but Allison Parker in 97 had one of those moments. And I can tell you that when the Holy Spirit did move and we gave him freedom to move, that services did become longer. And it did get messier, and quality went down in some moments. And sometimes people were uncomfortable and left because they didn't understand what was going on. And then after living in that for a while, we established our own routine with that, where worship had to go a certain length and preaching had to be a certain length. And then it sort of felt stale. Like what was authentically a move of God then became something we were trying to mimic. Yes. And you can actually have longer worship sets and you never know what's going to happen. And it be not a move of God, it just be a little bit more of a spontaneous go with the flow style. The risk of that style is that you do turn away people that need Jesus because you do things a little more sloppier, right? So if you get sloppy with it, then you might lose the opportunity, because this is what the produced motive has been, hopefully, which is to do things in such a way that people come in, can trust the brand, they know what's going to happen, they can bring a friend and know this is going to be how the service is going to happen, and they feel like that then it's a safe place for their friend to have an experience with God, because most of these concerns are not the concerns of people that don't know Jesus. They're the concerns of people who are very churched and want church to feel a certain way.
Yeah.
When you're bringing a lost person to church, you think very differently about the music and the message. If you're coming just for you, then you think about it more like, did I like that? Did that taste good? Did I like that preaching? How did this meaningful to me?
Yeah.
So bringing people that don't know Jesus to Christ has to stay a part of this conversation, because if we just are true to our authentic selves in worship and never win another person to Christ, then we're really not doing our jobs.
Okay, but somebody would say, well, so you're saying spontaneous worship is going to kill evangelism? Can it be both?
It can. It doesn't have to, but it can. If we don't stay aware of the fact that there is a seeker in the room, actually, this is a biblical thing. 1 Corinthians 14 is a whole treatise on don't forget the fact that there might be someone in the room that doesn't understand what's going on. That's what the Corinthians were doing. So yeah, if we became overly believer focused and we are no longer thinking about the fact that there's an outsider in the room, and we don't at least pause to explain. So I don't have a problem with long worship sets. I don't have a problem with spontaneous worship, but I do think it has to be pastored.
Yeah.
I do think someone has to come up at some point and say, by the way, this is what's going on. And if you're new, we just want to say, here's what you can expect and here's what God's doing. And we're going to go back into a song and here's why. Like, it does have to be pastored or else it can become its own version of liturgy. So like in the high church model, liturgy is you come in and there's a program and you pray this prayer and you read this verse and you sing this song and then you sit down and there's a 20-minute homily and everybody knows exactly what it is.
By the way, high church, you mean one steeped in tradition of church
history. One that has history, one that... Right. Even the messages are a part of a lexicon. Lexicon or what is that? There is a, anyway, the texts are sort of mapped out for every church to follow over. I'll think of that word later. Charismatic Pentecostal church tend to be low church, meaning that we are more spontaneous by nature and believe in the flowing of the Holy Spirit and have a high value on interruption and don't want to plan everything out just in case God might do something. But recent days, a lot of mega churches and churches that are, let's say, 1,000 or more, tend to have their own liturgy. They have their own, like, three songs that are pumping, and then someone gets up and greets everybody, and then there's a prayer moment, and then there's a welcome, and there's a couple videos, and then there's a message. And the message is typically really well done and communicated, and then there's a way that the service ends. So the service has a packaging to it. And part of the reason why those churches grow large is because of their excellence. And because their brand becomes trustworthy to people, because it's effective. And what we're saying now is maybe that's run its course and there needs to be a pendulum swing to a little bit less production and a little bit more spontaneity and flow.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
I don't know. I think it's a question. I don't think that what we're, I just want to say, at least what I'm saying.
By the way, here we are. This is part of what the value, I guess, of the podcast is. Not sure even where, so I'm leading the church and I'm curiously saying, I'm not sure where we're going.
Yeah.
Like we're exploring out loud the fact that we don't know everything and we are actually trying to figure out what's best and we're hearing what's said in the culture and we're trying to figure out and we're actually doing that out loud for y'all. So
it may
feel a little bit like, do you guys even know what you think?
Well, I have something to say after you. But
and I think what we're saying is we are wrestling through this and we're doing it out loud because we want you, as if you're a pastor or a leader or you go to Allison Park Church or some other church, it's actually good to flesh out a conversation like this because then you can see what the various sides of the spectrum are and what the issues are beneath the surface of it all.
So can I? Okay.
By the way, we never did get to your relevant article. Sorry, I mean, I interrupted you twice. Go, Dave, go.
That's where I'm taking it, Dad. So I was going to say, if I could steer our conversation for a couple of minutes.
Yes.
Which, by the way, that would be really great. All right, you're in the middle next time. The middle guy just gets skipped over all the time. Just kidding. No, but let me just do this for a couple of minutes. If you can hold on to your thought.
I
want you to have this. I think it's helpful to expand our conversation about spiritual authenticity to be bigger than just worship.
Yes.
And the way we're talking about it is in a programmatic corporate church setting. Yes, there is a resistance against anything that feels corporate. It's too produced, it's plastic, it's factory manufactured, and we need to have something that's more raw because the Holy Spirit is raw. Okay, but then there's this idea of spiritual authenticity, which is not just in the corporate sense, it's also more in a personal sense. And I think people would probably push against seeing inauthenticity specifically in leaders because they're in front of people and they tend to have this manufactured image and a manicured Instagram and whatever else. And there was an article that, you know, like writes about this in Relevant, you know.
Relevant magazine,
yeah. It's the article is called "Being Authentic Quotes is More Than Just Being Honest" by Stephen McAlpin, who's a pastor in LA. And he was talking about this idea, you know, authenticity is such a big thing. It's a buzzword with our generation. And he was saying that he lives in a neighborhood where, you know, they're sort of this intentionality to subvert the establishments and traditions and to be different and to not, you know, not just do what people tell you to do, but to be authentically you. And so he talks about what is authenticity. It's more than just honesty. He has sort of three keys or a sort of a guide of authenticity. He says, number one is be vulnerable. And then he goes into sort of like this idea of being vulnerable is like denying yourself daily. Like this is going to be, you know, sort of someone who is letting Jesus mold them, and they're being vulnerable, at least privately and hopefully publicly. Then he says, embrace the tension of the fact that you're imperfect. Take up your cross daily. And then three would be recover with God's story. So you're vulnerable, you're in the tension that you're not perfect, and then you're showing how you're being changed by what God's doing.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Okay, good article. But you, when you sent it to me, you were like, what was it about that?
I think that authenticity was being made to sound like a spiritual fruit of the Spirit or a discipline, and humility is, which I think is what's being reflected there. And I think like authenticity and being genuine and being vulnerable is attractive, and it helps you to relate to someone better. But there's a large part of me that says, I think we have to acknowledge that I think authenticity as a value is somewhat cultural. It's actually probably way more cultural than it is biblical.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's an important thing, because if you're not authentic to God, if you're not actually being vulnerable, because I think that's a better term than authentic. If you're not being vulnerable to God, he can't change you. But you could be privately vulnerable to God and being changed and be outwardly, you know, guarded, you could say, and that would feel inauthentic. I don't know. It's just the whole conversation.
Well, okay, so I agree with you. I think that the word authentic, so there is a little bit of a hidden trap here, and I might talk for just a minute. So I think that there is what I would call an alternate religion to Christianity that the culture believes deeply, which is the worship of self. It is the self-centered religion. It says basically, what did you say? I am the main character in the story of the world.
Yeah, main character energy.
Okay.
That's what I said.
And everybody, everything in the world relates to me and who I am. And being authentic fulfills the great value of the alternate religion to Christianity, which is I need to be true to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so being authentic, inauthentic is that I'm not being true to me. Being, which is the highest value in the self, the worship of self religion.
Yes.
Okay. I am not as concerned about being true to me. I'm actually being concerned about being true to Jesus. Now, what I liked about the article is that he was saying, die to yourself, conform to Christ, and allow that his story of changing you from what you used to be to what you need to be as a part of who you're living. So the centerpiece of Christianity is to become like Jesus.
Yeah.
And to be honest about the journey of becoming like Jesus and the flaws that I have and being humble and being willing to state out loud that I'm not where I need to be, but I'm trying to become like Jesus.
Yeah.
That is good authenticity. That's Christian authenticity. Being true to myself and letting the world know, like I'm being subversive to the establishment so I can be true to myself and find my own path. That is a different religion than Christianity.
Well, and if I could just
and it actually leads
there.
Us into something we would call idolatry, which is the worship of self.
Well, and I'll let you go.
So I think how we use that word is very dangerous, because the Bible would call it sincerity, or they would call it honesty. And when you use the word authenticity, it's very possible that you could be talking about something that has more to do with idolatry than it does to do with Christianity.
You got to elaborate on what you mean by
that. So some people might use the word authentic and mean I'm trying to do my best to live a life where everyone can see that I'm on my own journey to try to become more like Jesus.
Sure.
And some people might use the word authentic to say I'm trying to live in such a way that the whole world can see who I am.
Can I elaborate with my own words on
that? Yeah, sure.
To live my best life, to show why I'm different, unique, to not let society repress the real me with their establishments and trying to make me conform to the way a man or a woman or a Christian should be, I'm going to be my own version of me.
Okay. And it is true, let's balance that the world can superimpose their idea of what Jesus is or what Christianity is on you. We don't want that. But there is something, like Jesus is not a moving target. Like Christ-likeness is not like what I decided is today. Like it is a fixed point that we're rowing toward. He was a person. He was real. He's alive today. He has certain responses in life. You can read about him. So it's not like I'm deciding what Jesus should look like for me and my world with my personality. No, Jesus is a fixed target. So we can all agree upon who he is and move toward him authentically. But we also can use that word as an excuse to just worship ourselves.
You know, something else that I find interesting about this is if Jesus is a fixed target and we're all trying to be, as you know, as I don't remember what verse it is, it says conform to the image of his son, being transformed to look more like Jesus. We're actually supposed to not become more individual, but more same. Like, I should look more like you as you look more like Jesus.
Individual in your hairstyle, in your tastes, in your music, in your race, in your biological sex, in your, you know, relationships, but same in character, same in response, same in attitude.
Same in an identity, though.
Same in identity.
And identity is one of those things.
Same in priority.
Elevated.
Right. So there are some things that are the same, and there are some things about you that are unique, and you should be specially unique in your gifting and your talent. Be who you are at the same time. Be like Jesus. And who you are, as special as it is, should never be worshipped.
In this instance that we're looking at in the article, I feel like he is... I agree with the assessments, but I feel like it's taking a specific problem to some churches, and it is, which I have seen done, using that to paint the problem with where we have been forever. It's always been the same thing where he says, you know, we are fed up with wearing masks. The cry for authenticity stems from the fact that we're a generation let down by previous ones, and we crave a place and people we can be our true selves and be truly loved. That feels to me like a specific place where it was like I had to fit in, and I wasn't allowed to talk about what I was going through. And then using that to paint the problem with all of Christianity. But I'm like, well, that is an issue. But that feels like it's taking the issue of vulnerability in specific. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
In this context.
Yeah. So there is a little bit of that in there. I could see why that part of the article I don't like, what you just read. The part I liked is these 3 points. I think that was really good.
Yeah, those are great.
I think the current generation has an opinion of itself. And I'll throw myself in the midst of it because I know I'm in the older part of it, that we are the most evolved generation.
Oh, I know.
That the generations previous to us, we're a little ashamed of.
Seems like you don't have to say, dude.
Because
it bothers me.
Because
I'm in that generation that's saying that. I'm like, oh, come on.
They're
guys,
not where we are. And we now have arrived at a place where we are handling all topics and all issues with much more sophistication than previous generations. And the previous generation just didn't understand. And they were repressing and holding us all back. And now that we have escaped their clutches, we are able to be free to be our authentic selves, which is to live into something. And honestly, I just say it's a little bit arrogant and it's a little bit ignorant.
Yes.
So I'll just say, like, one of my heroes is my dad. My dad, who passed away, he was, if you were to judge him from the outside, he wore a suit and tie every day. He cut the grass in a suit and tie. He was taught that pastors wear a suit and tie.
Did he actually cut the grass wearing a suit and tie?
He took the jacket off. Okay. Wingtip shoes. I'm seriously. Wingtip shoes, suit pants, a tie, loosened, and he was out cutting the grass. You would say, that is so fake. Why does he have to wear those clothes? Does he think that's his uniform? I'll just tell you, I don't know anyone more like Jesus, more authentic in his pursuit of Christ. But he would have preached in a way that felt more dramatic and authoritative. His convictions about the world were all biblically based. People might judge his views of certain things as being less evolved. But I got to tell you, I would rather be like my dad than like a lot of the things I see out there in the culture today. And I'm not exactly sure that we have evolved from previous generations. But the judgmentalism of past generations is just a bit hard to take.
It's coming back around like a boomerang, which is part of why I'm like, no, because I am so positive.
And I know you have a lot.
Then in a few years,
I want to throw in one thought.
Oh,
and
we're
then
gonna,
you can see.
Well, no, your kids, gonna, I mean, what were you
that's
so
what
that's
I'm
the
saying.
Thing. It's like,
they're gonna be like, look at those idiots. It's like, oh, we were you at one point.
Well, and to be fair, previous generations have judged younger generations in the same way.
Yeah.
To say, so there was a moment, I guess I can talk about this openly. I don't know. I was a young pastor. I was at General Council, which is our denominational meeting. And the older generation was very much afraid of what we would do when we got in control. And so they actually made us sign a document because they didn't trust us to say we will stay true to these, you know, things. And I felt kind of insulted in that moment. Like, rather than them saying, we believe in you, we know you can do it, they were saying, we don't trust you, basically, implicitly, and we need you to make certain commitments to keep this. And that was, what, 35 years ago. So I think that what I would want is for people to say about me, who come after me, what I say about my dad. Yeah. Do I agree with everything that that generation did, but do I honor that generation for what they passed on to me? I actually think that there is something baked into that that is a little bit of a dishonor. It's almost like a violation of the commandments. Yeah. Honor your father and mother. There is almost like the smug thing of past generations aren't what we are today. Yep. And I'm just trying to be my authentic self, when really we could probably learn from previous generations so much that we are now discounting just simply because it wore different clothes. Yeah. And played different music.
Well, let me quickly validate the other side, because I think it'll, but I think I can, yeah. So I understand, because I think for anybody that does feel this way and they would hear arrogant, they're like, what? But what happens is we in general, humans tend to do this. We take an anecdotal experience that relates to us, and we say, this applies to everyone. We take some, and with the internet, people come together and they find groups and tribes where they say, you also had this experience? I would have already said this was a problem, but now look, we can all come together. And like we're saying, there have been some toxic, there's always toxic things from older generations to younger generations and vice versa. So the younger generations take those anecdotal things and get online and find these tribes. And so it feels especially arrogant now because of that.
So here's
It doesn't invalidate a genuine, painful, toxic moment that you went through.
Okay, but can I get meta for a second?
Sure, go ahead.
Because our generation is doing toxic things. We're just not in that place of where everybody looks and says, look at that generation. You're grouping a whole generation together. And not only that, but if we get real meta, the way that the Bible describes believers is as one family over generations and generations. Yeah, I mean, true. We have thousands of generations that we're looking back on, and we're all one. And like, the future generations are going to have to look back at us, and hopefully we leave the right legacy. But if you're talking about just our whole generation, there are plenty of toxic people that are my age or that are younger or that are older. And I just think that like when one thing that happens when we go towards authenticity is it puts all the focus on the individual and not on the group collective identity, which is what the Bible perspective is, is that you as an individual actually less important than the body, which is under Jesus. And we have to see like, okay, the story of the Bible or of our relationship with God is not Jesus and me. It's actually Jesus and us, therefore also me. But it's us. It's
and you can't, out of disdain, divorce yourself from previous generations just because you think you know more now.
Yes.
You actually have to live into the generational story.
Yes.
And it's that. So I actually have a thought that I don't know what to do with this thought. Maybe I'll just say it now. I think your generation, and maybe your generation and younger, you know, you have these two characters in the scripture, Joshua and Rehoboam. Joshua, which took the baton from Moses, honored Moses, and took his generation into the promised land. And Rehoboam, who took the throne from his dad Solomon, but because he didn't listen to the elder generation, ended up doing foolish things and divided the kingdom. My question is, will this next generation be a Joshua generation that leads itself into the promised land, or a Rehoboam generation which leads itself into foolishness and division? And some of that is determined by how you honor and listen to the generation that came ahead of you. Mm-hmm. And if you brand it all as inauthentic and toxic, then you'll never learn from it. And you'll end up repeating mistakes you don't have to repeat, because I do think there is some wisdom that comes with honor.
Yeah.
And, you know, in centuries past, the elder generation always had the loudest voice. Mm-hmm. That is no longer the case. And so now the loudest voice is typically the younger generation in pretty much every way, because of the advent of social media. And you all, your generation and younger, has more access to information than ever before. You all know more at your fingertips, we all should say, than ever before. But there's a difference between information and wisdom. You can have tons of information and not be living a wise life. And I think that what's missing at times is you can be authentically foolish and you can be a bit guarded and be wise. And I would take wise any day of the week. Yeah. And so there is other qualities besides authenticity that need to be in the mix of this stew we're creating that we call life. Yeah. It's one thing I think that is really important. And what do they say? If you share your successes, you're building a wall. If you share your failures, you're building a bridge. Authenticity, being vulnerable, sharing your story, admitting your faults, being willing to share who you are. I think that's all great. Yeah. I think we should take all of that and say, yes, 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 yes. But to say, I'm better than this, I'm more evolved than this, simply because I have now branded the things that work before me or that I don't like or that I'm subverting as somehow evil, which makes me good because I have the right opinions. I don't know that that's worth much.
So can I give one more thought? I think we eventually need to get back to, so where do we land with authenticity? We're going there. But I do want to say, I think that this is why, and we've talked about this from time to time in our podcast, but it's why I think that the deconstruction movement in general is a danger to Christians, because it's not a bit, we do have to rebuild, because there are things that previous generations get wrong, that if we want to keep the legacy of faith going, we have to be better in some ways or more faithful to our calling or to God. But when we tear down previous things that have been established, you might be tearing down what God built and not just what somebody else who's a man or a woman built. Sure.
Well, and that's the thing. Here's the deal. Anybody can tell you what's wrong, but few can build it right. Yeah. So just because you know what's broken doesn't mean you built anything successful, right? Like I know in leadership, 1,000 people can tell me 1,000 different problems right now with Allison Park Church. What I'm interested in is who can fix it. Yeah. And who can, so everybody can say what's wrong with the family right now. So what do we fix? What do we do to fix it? Marriages aren't what they need to be. What do we do to fix it? The culture isn't what it needs to be. What do we do to fix it? Anyone can point out the flaws. There is no virtue in identifying what's broken. Virtue is being able to build your life on something good and then say to other people, follow me as I follow Christ. And what we need is authentic virtue, right? Authentic wisdom. Because that's what I don't want to follow just someone authentic. I want to follow someone who's authentic and effective. Both of those things have to be there.
There's also, this probably has come up in a past conversation, there's also a tendency to overemphasize things getting fixed from a programmatic or stage perspective and to say, well, I would fix a problem if we would just do something at the church like this.
Or in the culture, we would say, it's one thing to protest a problem or subvert it. It's so you can tear the building down. It's another thing to reconstruct the building on something sound and make it work. So if we're not going to do produced and programmatic in the worship service, we have to rebuild it as something else. It's not enough just to be a critic. You can't just be a critic and get away with it. I'm an authentic critic. Okay, well, that's great. But you actually have to do something. Like, you have to actually say, follow me, build it my way. I'm not perfect,
so
but
now
I'm
can
trying.
Everybody come to you? If we have people from Allison Park, can they come to you and say, let me fix it? Give me the
reins. Oh, absolutely. Well, okay, so yes, but within their lane, within their gift, within their assignment, as they're mentored. But if anyone that comes with solutions to problems, like not this is how so-and-so needs to fix it, but I'll stand on this wall right here and I'll rebuild this little territory. Like, okay, we're having a problem, let's say, with life groups. I'll lead a life group and show you what I mean. You come to my life group and see how healthy it is. Maybe then I can mentor other life group leaders. Yeah. But looking for just someone to point out the flaws and then say, I'll tell you how to fix it. Like, no, that doesn't help anybody. You actually have to do it yourself. You got to lead it.
I guess... I'm not trying to steer this off topic again. I just feel like
I got into pet peeviness. Sorry.
No, yeah. I think we all are a little bit. I'm just trying to talk about this virtue. I think authenticity is so healthy and right if it's taken out of the context of tribalness or whatever you want to call that. I think if we break down into generations or the patriarchy versus this, or racial lines, or different church traditions, the more we break down something into tribes and talk about being authentic to my tribe or me as an individual, the further away from the heart of God that we get. And I think that we need to be vulnerable while being unified, because that might be the biggest problem within the church in general is disunity in our current world culture. Disunity, I'm a part of this tribe, and we disassociate ourselves from the rest of the family of God that we're supposed to be a part of. So I guess that's my call and my hope. Can we be authentic and vulnerable while still being unified and honoring to other tribes or generations?
Yeah. This was an all over the place episode.
It
huh?
is.
There's a lot that's tied to it. And I'm going to just quickly, can I say two really quick thoughts to wrap up the worship side of it? Because it's kind of full circle. We started there. We got away from this and moved into you know, full other stuff. But I think with worship, I just want to quickly say, as somebody who's talking about this with our worship leaders that are here and with other worship leaders, I would at least say, and I know not everybody would agree, authenticity, and we're talking about worship, is not synonymous with spontaneity. I think you can, when you're willing to be free, that's great. But like you said, I think you can be, I've seen plenty of things that are spontaneous, and I felt like not authentic because they got obsessed with the spontaneity, and that became its own thing. And I think seeing things that are planned and are very authentic. I think it has to do more with the vulnerability and the heart of the person leading and your willingness to change things up sometimes and all that stuff. The other thing I'll say is, like, and anytime I talk to our worship leaders or I teach in the ministry school, one of the things I always talk about is just your mission kills your preference. So even what we do all the time isn't even always my preference, or and I've heard you say this, it's not what we're doing. You know, I think maybe sometimes preference and authenticity. Well, if you know, if you're authentic yourself, you would do your preference and people can learn to, but it's like, no, we have a mission. One of our missions is to reach the lost, to reach people who are newer.
That's good. And that's a very good statement. Is that yours?
Unless I took it from somewhere and I plagiarized it, it's one that I wrote down. And if I stole it, I'm sorry, but
you
I will
stole
at least
from ChatGPT.
Yeah, I'll attribute it to myself for now until someone tells me that it's theirs. But yeah,
that's good. That's good. Well, I think that this is, I'm not trying to be cheesy with the pun, but I do think that this is an authentic, raw conversation because it is all over the place.
Yeah, it is.
It's a cultural value that is a value of many Christians.
So we should just be all over the place is what you're saying.
So we should just do whatever we each feel like.
No, but no, it is a cultural value that has some great spiritual benefit if practiced and emphasized in the right way.
Yeah, absolutely.
It isn't a gift of the Spirit. And it isn't actually a biblical word, but it's related to some biblical words. And if we approach it with the right attitude, can be very healthy. And of course, fake or inauthentic is bad. It's never good to be fake or to be inauthentic. But being authentic in the proper way, I think, is what we're after, which is authentically like Christ, with wisdom and virtue and sincerity and honesty and humility, admitting that we're not perfect and we're on a journey, without dishonoring those that have come before us or judging those who are around us. We are humble enough to not think that we're the be-all and end-all, and that's, I think, part of it. And we have to do more than just subvert things. We have to build things.
That's good.
And in an authentic way.
Great closing thoughts. Josh, anything you want to add?
No, that's great. I added my stuff, yeah.
I think that my closing thought on this would just be, I think that if we start thinking about problems with things in general, I loved your idea. It's not just bring solutions, but it's what is my role to this burden that I feel? If there's a problem, oftentimes God's speaking like, I want you to be a part of the building process and the unification. And sometimes I want you to die to some of your own stuff because you don't look like Jesus as much as you look like you, and you got to be less authentically you and more authentically like Jesus there's too much of you in that mix. And that's something that I think I have to go through myself. And so it's causing me to be a little reflective and hopefully healthy way. And hopefully it will cause you to be reflective and healthy way. And we just want to say again, we are so thankful for you joining the conversation. We always appreciate your thoughts and ideas. And so if you have things that you'd like to hear us discuss, please, you know, reach out to us, email us, DM on Instagram to Jeff, because I'm not on Instagram that much, unfortunately. I'm on every so often, but you got to catch me at the right moment. But we would love to hear your thoughts. And, you know, I know we ask this a lot, but it would really mean a lot to us if you would leave us a 5-star review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts.
But only if you authentically feel that way.
Only if you, yeah. And if you authentically like our YouTube channel, you can like and subscribe to that, share on social media, do whatever you can. But it would help us to get the word out, and we would really appreciate that. So thank you for joining us this week. We'll see you guys next time.